That was Carol Denny's 5 years ago, singing at a recital where she also reads poetry. Here's actually an example of some of her haiku. She focuses a lot on folks outside and false values that surround, I think, the opinions and actions of people towards the poor generally.
Also, I write some very dark holiday haiku, so I'm just going to read these. These are five that I send in a row to my friends at holiday time. Come, little reindeer. We welcome you in since we ran out of turkey. Styrofoam snowmen, oh, what fun just watching them burning on the lawn. I don't mind shopping. I really don't mind at all, as long as I'm armed. Ceramic Santas sitting in a discount bin. Where is my hammer? One Christmas special too many, it said in the coroner's report. This is called Street Gig. I play on the street today in front of Coldwell Banker, unless it pours. The closer it gets to Christmas, the more generous shoppers become if you wear the right shoes. It's a little sad. They love the really bright colors. If you wear the right shoes, you get paper. Otherwise, it's nickels and dimes. This is called The Worst Opera. My 15th court appearance was like watching the worst opera ever produced. The worst libretto, with the worst timing, the most boring costumes, the most terrible singers, no harmony, no instruments, a lot of whispering. The paper rustling was louder than the actors. The audience was only waiting for their small part to be over. And then one by one, they would leave.
There's plenty more poetry from Carol Denny actually regularly in the Street Spirit newspaper, which you can find at the Sub Rosa Cafe, sometimes sold by actual homeless vendors on the streets of Santa Cruz. I ran into the regular vendor, Shorty, who just got out of jail. Don't know if he's going to be picking up on that. He seemed very downcast when I spoke to him. But you can get a copy of it, as I said, either from me. I do the Huff meetings, as mentioned earlier in this broadcast. It's every 2 weeks, coming up actually on the 7th, I guess.
Yeah?
7th of this month. Or anytime the Sub Rosa is open. Also, you can go online and find the Street Spirit. And if you like this series of performances by Denny, you can actually find her online on YouTube, because that is where I found her. And here are a few snippets, odds and ends, that I'm going to kind of piece together as the conclusion of this show, almost. I may get ambitious and continue a little longer, but this is my first introduction to the staff who are running the Boneyard River Street Campground when I drove by. I've been driving by pretty regularly every day for the last few months, watching this barbed wire area, a small area that's supposed to serve as an alternate campground to the San Lorenzo Campground. And as I can't tire of endlessly saying, that it's obviously the excuse for shutting it down so that festive events can be held and people no longer need to behold very visibly homeless people in tents, and more important, allowing them the kind of, at least an echo or an illusion or a shadow of the freedom that they deserve as ordinary human beings who are in unfortunate circumstances, specifically without housing, that we really are all entitled to. Sorry, libertarians, you know, sorry, capitalists. And without endless government intervention, sorry, socialists, sorry, communists, I should say state capitalists. Anyway, here's a series of little interviews and moments, and see what you think. So Adam is the supervisor of the campground. From Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
What can we help you for?
Just wondering, you're the supervisor of the camp, yeah?
I'm one of the assistant managers, yeah.
And how's it looking? Is it filled up? Are there a lot of applicants?
We got a lot of applicants. We're filling it up over the next couple days.
And how many people do you estimate is the max?
I can't talk in terms of people, but we have 60 campsites available.
And that it might be two people per tent, it might be more, it might be less, that sort of thing?
Depends on the composition of the couple or individual.
And
Is the barbed wire due to come down, or is it going to stay up?
I can't speak on that. That's not really my ballpark.
Yeah,
I don't know either. Susie O'Hara said it was coming, maybe coming down, but she
wanted to come down.
Yeah.
As would I, but we'll see. That's really up to see.
Will you be staying here yourself?
No, I won't.
And has anybody moved in yet?
Yeah, we got a couple campsites up.
What day are you officially open? Shall we advise? We're going to the campground to talk to the folks there.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to head back there right now. I got to go get some supplies for the pickup.
Now, is the day it closes today or is it tomorrow?
As far as I'm aware, the San Lorenzo campsite's being closed on the 28th.
So that'll be tomorrow.
Yes, we're trying to move as many people then.
And I see you're busy, but let's... And again, your name is...
I'm Adam, Adam Carruthers.
If people want more information, how can they reach you to get to speak with you or email you?
They can talk to the city down at City Hall. They can talk to Chris Monteith, or they can contact me or Jennifer.
You got a phone number for Chris?
I have one handy. I think you better ask him for that, though. I don't know if he wants me giving that out.
Email?
I'll give out my email.
Fair enough.
It's at gmail.com.
Can you spell that for me?
Yeah, Acarothers.
And...
No promises on how helpful I am, though. I'm only an assistant manager.
Thank you. Thank you very much, man. And we've been talking with?
It's Adam. Adam Carruthers.
Thanks, Adam.
All right.
And you can also hear the whoosh of cars going past. I don't know how audible it is to people trying to sleep in the, essentially right next to the highway, the Highway 9 River Street area. But that's an additional reality for people in this sort of stack them up like cordwood, get them away from the San Lorenzo Park boneyard, barbed wire fence, a little razor wire too, as I said before, campground. And some will say, well, look, it's the first campground that the city has ever really sponsored. And that's true. All the other campgrounds were initiated by protest actions, whether we're talking about the Coral Street open-air shelter, whether we're talking about Camp Paradise or the Occupy movement in San Lorenzo in 2011, or the current campground that actually got was the place that people came to, and that without any kind of city council authorization, Chief Andy Mills sent people to in order to essentially address and neutralize and neuter protest at City Hall by the Freedom Sleepers and then by the Survival Sleepers' mere presence at the post office this last summer. So some, like Brent Adams, are trying to be optimistic. He was more optimistic in a previous interview I had with him in one of my earlier shows. But it is a city-sponsored campground, which you would have heard politicians endlessly say could never work. Everyone will come from miles around this wonderful campground, I guess, trying to make sure that that doesn't happen. But, of course, what will happen is it will show the extent of the need in Santa Cruz itself at this moment. But, of course, that's one of the reasons, I think, that politicians like Rotkin and others didn't want to set it up, didn't even want to talk about it. But suddenly it got set up unilaterally by Martine Bernal and Mills and other essentially city officials who I've always been regarding as sort of the major demons, but apparently the devil is doing the details, or at least making a token effort simply, you know, to maybe it's simply to recognize the cost of the constant policing of homeless people everywhere, and to give a sort of a but to recognize the possible legal consequences, because as we've heard from a couple of reports in this show, although one of them is from Washington State in Seattle or in that area, and other is from San Diego and Los Angeles, and there's lawsuits in the Bay Area happening. If you can't give a person a place to sleep, then you can't arrest them for sleeping where they have to. And that is becoming the problem with the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban legally, although it has not yet been established in this jurisdiction.
So today is the Monday the 26th that I'm talking to
Dave.
And Dave, you're here with your notorious guard dog,
Humphrey.
And you have a sign that says, "Anything helps. My puppy and I thank God bless. Will work.
Will work.
And how are the pickings?
How's what?
How's it going?
Well, okay, till the rain hit, but we'll live.
Now, what impact has the rain had on you? We should say you're up here in Felton at the Safeway.
Because it's colder than Santa Cruz, and I'm tired of getting ripped off and Take Back Santa Cruz. I think it's them. This chick came up Santa Cruz Bible about a year ago and goes, "I'm a custodian here." I go, "I know every staff here. You're not no custodian. You're lying to me." And she came up to me 2 weeks ago and screamed, "Get out, get out!" In this car with some dude that got out and tried to be tough with me, but he wouldn't do nothing.
Wait, now, where was this?
It was off Frederick at businesses.
And how long have you been a man of the area?
All my life, 54 years almost.
And how long have you been outside?
About 8 or 10.
Any changes in the life scene outside?
Oh, yeah. I've been jumped a few times, all kinds of shit. Beat up. My dog's been stolen.
Well, how'd you get the dog back?
Well, my buddy, I threw flyers everywhere. My buddy got the full plate number. He said he had an early Christmas present. And I think PD picked up the credit for that one because I had called one cop and told him that somebody I kind of know, PD.
Santa Cruz PD?
Yes, Black and White, yes. And he said, "Okay," and then a day went by. I go, "Get my dog in a half hour, or I'm going to go get her." You know what I'll do, because I want my dog back. I'd flip out, you know. So he went and got her for me, and a half hour, 45 minutes later, I had her.
How old is this pooch?
13, almost.
What kind of health is the dog in?
Perfect. She chased deer this morning and storked this afternoon.
And the rain hit, I guess it was, what, last night? What impact
last
did it have?
Last night at 3 a.m., and then it came back, hit right after daylight, but I did heat up coffee over open fire because I can't have one Santa Cruz to stay warm. And I can't go to shelters. People, it's too loud in there, and my dog usually ain't loud. So I know how to live in the woods, so leave me alone, Rangers.
Do they?
Basically, yeah. Last time they wrote on a card all the violations, but they write me a ticket because I wasn't there, but Maggie was.
You're talking about the Santa Cruz Parks and Rec?
Yeah, here at Canary Cow, yeah, they know me personally.
Have you been in Santa Cruz during the period of time when Mills, the police chief, did the sleeping ban suspension and stopped giving tickets for people for sleeping? Or that was between...
They haven't messed with me in a long time.
That's good. So for even long before that?
Yeah, but when they say off Ziani Trail or something, you know, you're overnight and they say a dog off leash, that's bullshit. Because you're in the mountains, you're on the river, nobody's around. You know, it's just pathetic.
So you're mostly in the county rather than in the city.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like... There's too much drama down there, you know.
I got nothing more to ask at the moment. Anything you want to ask me?
Nope, I'm done too.
And we have been talking with...
Dave.
Thank you, Dave. Should be on Free Radio Thursday.
And it got on Sunday. There was a meeting of the Santa Cruz City Council last Tuesday, and I showed up mainly because I was down at the San Lorenzo campground in its final days, and I wanted to make a statement to the city council, actually to the community. The city council really couldn't care less, is my impression. And so I spoke on a couple of items and also did a little recording of some items that came up on the agenda. One of the items that came up, and this is the last one that you'll hear in this, there's going to be a relatively longer segment after we have this short segment, which is going to talk about Measure K, or I should say the abolition of Measure K. Measure K is the lowest enforcement priority for marijuana, not just medical marijuana, but all marijuana. It sort of preceded the, I call it minor legalization of recreational marijuana that happened a couple years ago statewide. And in Santa Cruz, Santa Barbara, and I think one other city, damned if I know it was Santa Rosa, maybe. Kind of as I say, a precursor to the statewide movement to make recreational marijuana at least no longer a misdemeanor or a felony. as far as state authorities were concerned, they tried to establish what's called the lowest enforcement priorities, which had been done in Berkeley, oh gosh, back in the late 70s. And it always ran afoul of police obstruction, police neglect, police defiance even, because police, the institutional police generally, would not come out in favor of the obvious, which is that marijuana is less dangerous than alcohol and most other drugs or legal recreational amusements. And it's also, I guess it was associated with a subculture that was politically anathema, poison to the conservative authorities. So what happened in Santa Cruz was the city council refused to even consider this, even though, you know, they're the great liberals, they're the great progressives. Even in the, around the time, this is around 2006, they were, you know, would not put it on their own ballot. They wouldn't put it on the ballot for a vote by citizens. They wouldn't pass it as a measure themselves. And so it was passed by the voters of Santa Cruz by a rather hefty margin. And what it did was it set up a commission. This was about 3 years after the city council had essentially aborted and shot dead the measure, actually disemboweled might be the better way to put it. They kind of ripped it apart, or maybe they quietly suffocated it. The Police Review Commission, what's called the Citizens Police Review Board, as it was known in Santa Cruz, which was for much of its reign a largely ineffectual body, as I've talked about many times on this program. But toward the end, under the chair of Mark Halfmoon, an African-American individual who was acquainted with poverty himself personally, and others on the Citizens Police Review Board, they began to look into selective enforcement of the laws, discrimination against the poor, racial profiling, display and use of force against the community generally. I don't know if they got into militarization of the police at that time, but they started considering issues that the city council and the police department particularly did not want considered. So the pretext used by the city council then was, oh, it's too expensive and we just want to get rid of it. So under Rotkin and Matthews, the two new council members, Cynthia Matthews is still with us. Rotkin is hopefully retired for good, but you never can tell. Oh, he's a Democratic Socialist, by the way. Democratic Socialists of America are getting a big rise. But anyway, locally, when any of these third and fourth parties actually, I wouldn't say they ever really got into power, but whenever their representatives got elected, they would act just like the Democrats, who are acting just like the Republicans on homeless issues and on police issues. So it's an important thing to remember if you think that jumping on one of these bandwagons is helpful. I suppose in some theoretical way it can be. In some cities that you get a somewhat more concerned approach. But generally, it's my view, these institutions corrupt the individuals, and the very party structures corrupt the people, the authoritarian hierarchical party structures. That's my anarchist bent coming out, where anarchy, of course, doesn't mean chaos. It means self-determination. It means voluntary mutual aid between people. It means no God, no rulers, no kings, no bosses. It's that kind of thing. Or these are all roles that we assume ourselves, and we rotate. Sort of like Greek democracy without the slavery and oppression of women, and without the imperialism, I guess. It's hard to find a model. I guess there are earlier models and before there was literacy. I don't know. So the Measure K Commission, which is what this rap is all about, was appointed to make sure that police did, in fact, not attempt to arrest or harass or ticket individuals who were in private using marijuana over the age of 21 and not driving. And that whole thing was passed by the voters here in Santa Cruz as a local initiative binding only on the city of Santa Cruz. But the city attorney immediately went to work to tear it apart by claiming it violated the city's charter. And Ben Rice, as attorney, and unfortunately some of the people who worked to put it together sold out the initiative after it was passed by doing a deal behind the scenes to agree to weaken it. It was further weakened by the appointment of now assistant city manager, then staff member Tina Scholl, who was, you know, I would say police bitch in the doghouse. Yeah, that's a derogatory term for what she did and what she was, and it is not intended to simply mock her gender. It, you know, that role was taken over by, well, it was furthered by people like Scott Collins. Nice enough guy, by the way, before he went off for a better-paying position, perhaps, in another city this last fall. But these are people who were the tools of and the agents of the city manager, Martine Bernal, who I've given a lot of honorable mention recently because of his work in, well, his determination not to, or his apparent decision for at least a period of time during the last 4 or 5 months, not to arrest people for sleeping at night if there's nothing else going on. But and that was done to some extent, you might say, at the initiative of Chief Andy Mills, and perhaps at the initiative of Martine Bernal, because he's the one who ultimately made the decision to employ Andy Mills without any, I think, much meaningful input from the community, though I think they did have a few public sessions on that. Anyway, the Measure K Commission was also... it dealt with the obstruction by the police department, the constant stalling by staff member Tina Scholl, and it was the chair and the vice chair, who I interviewed, eventually became so frustrated they quit, saying they couldn't review the police if they didn't get the cooperation of the city council. And other people were appointed. I think the head of the United Way was appointed to it. Other people who were simply had no interest in reviewing the police. And it eventually became a situation where they simply didn't meet. And this was described by City Attorney Condotti, and you'll hear this because I'm going to be playing a longer section in the city council meeting that happened last week, as the reason to eliminate it, because after all, we have recreational marijuana now. It's been legalized, and you know, there's no need to have any problem at all because it's been solved. And this is an unnecessary item, and actually with people stopped meeting anyway because it was unnecessary. And this fairy tale was bought by Crone and Brown, the two so-called progressive, also and occasionally actually progressive talking members and sometimes voting members of the current city council. Here's an activist, Coral Brun, who is an occasional Huff activist as well, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, who was appointed to the Measure K Commission in its during its completely ineffectual days. Talking about it, I interviewed her after the city council's Tuesday session. We're going to hear her thoughts on that, and we're going to hear them now. So this is another interview with Coral Brun, who's formerly a member of the Measure K Commission, which looks like it's headed for the boneyard. I don't mean the campground. I mean the elephant's graveyard soon, thanks to City Council. When were you on that? Do you remember?
I was on there from 2014 until the end of 2016.
And how often did you meet?
We met once every 6 months. I'd like to say hi to my friend listening in L.A., Beres.
Oh, if someone's listening in L.A., I'm glad to hear it. This was a commission that I noticed was always understaffed, or not understaffed, it was under, I would say, manned, because it was... they never had the full component on the commission, partially because some of the members, council members, I assume, didn't want to appoint people, and partially because other council members were negligent in appointing, and then also because there was very little interest in the commission. What was your experience with the Measure K Commission?
There, a lot of paperwork, of course, a lot of planning. They had... It's imperative that you communicate and make sure that you didn't have any conflict of interest. It was a two-hour computerized prerequisite that you needed to fill out every year. And then, you know, they would have the staff had arranged what the topics would be that meeting.
Do you remember any topics that actually involved police misconduct around marijuana, or at least observing closely what the police were doing or recommending policies?
They had stats they said they had been collecting, and it was about the use of marijuana and related to whether people were using it in their home, whether they were in their car, or they're out in public. And then they lumped them all together with other arrests, like if maybe they were, maybe it's domestic abuse. And they tried to act like that was all separate, but they were kind of lumped in together. So trying to show that it had gone down.
And was I often in city council meetings, although not always, and one today is an example of the not always, you get oral communication that can be very interesting and pertinent because the actual commission body or the city council isn't considering issues, hasn't put them into an agenda form, and they don't get out except through commentary by the public. Did you ever hear that happening at the Measure K Commission that you remember?
Well, you're asking me if the public made a point of having something on the agenda?
No, I'm asking you although that would be interesting. I'm not aware that, you're probably not aware if that ever happened, because that would happen probably behind the scenes. But if you know about that, that would be interesting. But rather, if the public made some points that you thought were relevant at the oral communication period.
A few times they came in and they went to oral communications before the meeting, which was sometimes a short meeting because there wouldn't be a consensus, wouldn't be enough members to even have a meeting.
The quorum, yeah. Do you remember them ever actually, anything they've actually said that you thought was an interesting point that still sticks in your mind? Remember, and I don't remember is an acceptable answer.
I do, but I don't remember the details at the moment.
I gotcha. I know that activists like Craig Canada, who for a while did a radio show on medical marijuana and who was mercilessly harassed by the police downtown when he was unhoused, and even when he was housed, if he tried to smoke to medicate, he would be likely to find himself attended to by police, and the Rangers weren't doing that in those days because they weren't, you know, stalking the streets downtown. They were stalking the parks and so forth. Mm. He's one person I remember who I tried to get him to be on the Measure K Commission because he was knowledgeable in that area, but he also was a rather sensitive and temperamental fellow who, perhaps wiser than I, didn't want to waste his time with a group that really had no interest in overseeing the police department, because that's really what its job was to oversee the police. And they did not take that very seriously at all. In fact, I would say the staff member, Tina Schul, who later became the assistant city manager, was one of the, you know, was sort of the police fox in the hen house. And she was the one who initially hogtied early members of the board who wanted to actually research these issues, and who, because of the hogtying, ultimately resigned from the board, the chair and the vice chair. That was 2007, 2008. And then I guess Mary Kay, what was her name, the chair? He was the head of United Way for a long time, or one of the big figures in United Way. I remember her because she locked me out of the chambers at one point. I kept pounding on the door. Finally, someone came over and let me in, but she said, "Oh, I'm sorry, oral communications has ended." I looked at her and said, "You've locked me out in violation of the Brown Act. What the hell are you talking about? Reopen oral communication." I don't remember if she did. I suspect she didn't, or maybe I'd have forgotten it by now. Anything else come up in your recollection about all this? And don't feel obliged to, you know, it's not a trick question. A quick answer is no if you don't remember anything, and yes, blah, 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 if you do.
This was before it became legal, of course, and I remember after my term was about to be over that so many more, members that council members were appointing new people, and they had totally different views on. Just cooperate with the council. So I know that the people that my co-members would not have been anyone that I would want to discuss anything because it would have been a pointless. It might have been interesting, but they had very conservatively more, narrow views on what the police should do in this community.
And we've been talking with former Measure K Commission member
Coral Bruhn.
Thank you, Coral.
Glad to be.
So there were a number of items on the agenda which people might have been interested in, and these included kind of follow-up on items that had happened before. I think I was out at the San Lorenzo campground trying to get, the interviews I got instead of sitting at the city council in the front row fuming at the council or falling asleep. They put together a resolution requesting the placement of a sales and use tax ballot on the agenda for the special June election that people actually, one of the things, a few things people get to vote on during the year here in Santa Cruz, actual voters get to vote on. All the rest is done by these council members who are elected by cash-giving constituencies, and it has a lot to do, I think, with how much money you spend in the election. Not always, but often. And whether anybody gets put up and supported depends on whether you're a part of the club, often. So they're trying to find money to create money for a one quarter of 1% retail transaction and use tax. I'm not quite sure exactly what all that means. A special municipal election, including a general purpose 1/4% on retail transactions. And both these motions carried. I'm reading from the agenda, so that really wasn't what I took away from the council or what I. By the time I got in there, they were talking about the UCSC Growth Initiative. And this resolution essentially requested early input regarding Santa Cruz community's opposition to the proposed enrollment growth at the University of California, which had to do with a proposed massive expansion of the university, which has a serious impact on housing, and as well as traffic and other issues. And I, this is one of the few times I actually got what I said at City Council got mentioned in a news story, which titillated me highly. I always like to see my name in the papers. Hence, I've been called a news hound by folks in some regards. But it's not so much that. Well, certainly it is that to an extent. You know, it's nice to be recognized and acknowledged and have what you say noted, usually. The substance of what I say is gutted or so briefly summarized as to make it often kind of irrelevant. Anyway, there was some minor attempts to sort of change the language around so that the language did not sort of acknowledge the likelihood that the university was going to go ahead and ignore what the city wanted passed as an initiative to stop the massive expansion of the university. And the majority of the council wanted to say, well, this is really a done deal. It's probably going to happen. So if it does happen, we hope you provide housing. And I thought this was pretty ridiculous. And even the actions by Brown and Crone to say, well, look, we want to strike the suggestion that this necessarily is about to happen or that we anticipate this happening. We just want to remove that. But there was really nothing done specifically, no concern about any substantive measures. And I brought that point up. And for some strange reason, Jessica York of the Sentinel mentioned it. And here is what I said, some of which she mentioned. And actually, let's look at the hit parade of sort of the usual voices. There was a university Flack speaking, a student urging that people pass this initiative because it expressed concern about the growth, but as I said, there was no attempt to actually do anything about it. I'll play a little of their back and forth.
Hi, good evening, Melissa Watley. Good evening. Melissa Watley, I'm the Director of Government and Community Relations for UC Santa Cruz. Thank you for hearing us today on this issue. It's very important, and we understand that, and we realize that, and we're part of this community as well. We do have some concerns with the item before you today, but that being said, we think it's more important that we continue the dialogue, and we hope that whatever happens today, it doesn't hinder our ability to work together with you and with staff and with the community.
And you know that if the university is signing on to this, it can't have much substance in terms of stopping the university from growth or mobilizing the community against it.
We want to hear input, we want to hear the concerns, we want to work together. So that's our message today. And I also, in that spirit, want to invite you and members of the public to come to one of our upcoming community hearings or our forums, which is going to be held on Monday, March the 5th at the Hotel Paradox at 7 p.m. We hope you will come and share your comments and views.
And perhaps if people came in massive numbers shouting about it and demanding the council do something, the university is going to, of course, pay no attention. But students can have some power, too, and they have in the past at least raised the issue. Again, that's tomorrow at the Hotel Paradox, if you're interested in going. It's happening, I guess, which looks like a token session of public input, but it's always an opportunity to confront officials, and sometimes that can be useful.
In addition to that, you can learn more information about our long-range development planning process on our website at lrdp.ucse.edu. So please take a visit. You can also sign up there to receive future notices of public meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
David?
Yes.
Yes,
Councilmember Matthews.
Melissa, I think the three community input sessions scheduled.
There are. The one on March 5th is at the Hotel Paradox. There's one on March 6th, and that's in Watsonville at the Civic Plaza Community Room. And there's one on March 8th at the Senior Center in Capitola.
This is the person asking about when are these sessions. This is Cynthia Matthews, who essentially is directing people away from the council to go complain about to the university about it. But, you know, it's because she doesn't want to do anything substantive around it is my cynical reaction.
Great.
Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
Hi, everyone.
Can you put the mic
on
so you can speak to
them? Yeah.
Thank you.
My name's Jenny. I'm a student at UCSC. I'm a third year. I'm part of a really large group of sustainable organizations. And this is a big thing that we've been talking about, the LRDP, the P3. And so we've been trying to express our concerns for it, but the university seems to be very they don't want to acknowledge our concerns, and they just keep kind of promoting this LRDP as something that's going to be great and it's going to help the whole community. But at the same time, it's, you know, there's already the housing crisis of Santa Cruz County.
The LRDP is the long-range development plan that will be shoveling more students into the university over the next decade.
And just having this a new enrollment of 10,000 students is going to, you know, affect the housing crisis even more. You know, you have a count of homeless young people under 25 doubled in the last 2 years, and 588 reported in 2017. Most of those are probably students. I myself went homeless for a while. And so just having those concerns out there is very essential for us students and for the community together so that we have this better relationship with you all. So I urge you to put this on the ballot and to put it forth for election. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Is there any other member of the public who would like to speak to this item? This will be our last speaker.
Members of the community and the city council, I'm Robert Norris with Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. A couple of the speakers, including Councilmember Crone, I didn't hear all the discussion, have talked about the importance of housing and the overreach of the university and its really negative impact on folks homeless and housed alike in the community. But my real question is this a substantive activity that the council is engaged in? I mean, you know, concerns, we have policies. Is there any substantive measure even being considered by this council, like, I don't know, limiting water use or imposing new taxes or something that might actually hit UCSC in the pocketbook? I am not at all educated on this issue. And I just walk into the room and I simply see this measure, which, you know, sure. But what about at a deeper level? What's going on here? I say this to the community because, as council knows and this community knows, I have very little confidence in this city council. Our views are very different on a number of different views, on a number of different matters. So I would really ask the members of the community and perhaps anyone in the council or staff who's interested in really considering what is actually being done to address and put some real pressure on the university other than token measures. Thank you.
That concludes the public comment period on this item. We'll turn it back to the council.
Councilmember Matthews. Because, so A says there shall be no additional enrollment growth at UCSC beyond the 19,500 students allowed by the current 2005 LRDP. That's a strong declarative statement. We obviously...
And actually, I had attempted... I was going to show some of the discussion with the attempt by Brown and Crone to amend this to say, well, let's not assume, let's not even indicate where we agree with them proceeding. And the Matthews-Terrazas majority council said, oh, no, it's a done deal. And so did Rochelle Naroyan, who sometimes dissents and says things that surprise and actually please me, but not in this case. I'm going to skip all that because getting kind of bored with this. And next up was oral communications, which is the Doghouse 5 p.m. session where they feel they have to give the public a chance to speak because it's required by state law, but they put it in the most difficult position. Actually, I think Terrazas, the mayor, has moved it to 5:30, which, you know, is sort of a brief gesture to folks who are working who can't get there at 5. But, of course, where it originally was when I began speaking at City Council several decades ago, is at 7 o'clock during the evening session. The evening session was the most important session. It was a regular session. Now they kill the evening sessions generally. Usually there are no evening sessions, except on rare occasions. And you get this strange placement of oral communications at the very, at this point in the late afternoon when most of the people have left who came for the afternoon session. And as I said in the past, if you were coming to the evening session, you first had to hear oral communication from members of the community, and that was considered an important aspect. Of course, realistically speaking, since the council doesn't listen to the community, it became more and more token over the years, and we see the decaying of even the forms of potential democracy. I don't think representative democracy is. It's called voting for people with dollars and connections actually has much to do with real direct democracy from the community, but even in its attenuated form, it's getting withering away. Anyway, here's oral communication. First speaker is Pat Kittle, or Cat Piddle, as I've sometimes mocked him, but I also want to state that on an issue, a certain issue, he and I kind of coincide. I've been concerned about the city council supporting the BDS movement against the Israeli government's abusive and threatening behaviors and oppressive behaviors toward the Palestinian population there. Boycott, divestment, and sanction. I'm wondering, you know, where it's at, what kind of investments the city has that may involve companies that invest with the Israeli government. And this doesn't come up at city council at all, as far as I know, or at least it hasn't when I've heard recently. Pat Kittle brings up issues of 9/11 and believes that the Israeli government was behind the bombing. I haven't got any opinion on that, really, because I haven't researched it. I've read some things at the time that made me concerned, but I can't really give an opinion on it, but he usually comes in with a sign that denounces the Israeli government, and he's a very kind of pugnacious fellow in terms of his presentation, partially because he's been dismissed very vocally by the council as a bigot. And he has spoken against immigration, which I disagree with him on, and also spoken against homeless civil rights, which I disagree with him on. He's big on the environment. He feels that homeless people despoil the environment. But on this issue about the Israeli government's culpability for murderous behaviors in the Mideast, I agree with him. So I'm playing a little of that. I guess sometimes I play with... I guess I want to make sure that I don't completely join the gang of exclusionary people who want to make him a complete pariah, because I don't think that is fair or appropriate, particularly in terms of some of the things he says that others will not say.
And when the is available, we'll start the topic. All right, please step up. You're ready to go.
Trying to prevent wars against Muslims, which have been raging at least ever since 9/11, is a direct result of 9/11. When George Bush got up there on the rubble of 9/11 and said, you know, they're going to pay for this, you people are still going along with George Bush. And George Bush did all that because he thinks the Israel lobby is where his butter gets bread, and he's right. And so are all the politicians since then, like Obama. In Trump. Hillary, her top seven campaign donors were Israel lobby billionaires. Every one of them wants a war with Iran. And by God, they are determined to get that war. You better believe they're determined to get that war. And they play dirty trying to set things up so that we'll do that. I urge you to look at Bolin.com, B-O-L-L-Y-N, an investigative reporter right here from Santa Cruz.
Next,
thank
next
you.
Speaker, please. Speaker, thanks.
Nate's going to want to hit all the scary aspects of global warming if he wants the city to buy more hybrids.
This is Brad, who is he speaks regularly at city council. I don't quite know how to characterize him. He's denounced me angrily on the streets. He's become friendlier in recent times. He talks a bit about homeless situations, and he seems to have, well, here's what he has to say.
Yeah, I want to say Brent's not here tonight filming because he worked so hard at the Warming Center last night in Watsonville. His program is absolutely a one of a kind, and it really hits the mark when it's trying to, you know, save lives. I had a few things I wanted to talk about.
Bless you.
Thank you.
And I'm only giving little kind of snippets here, mainly out of both time and patience concerns for me. Here I am speaking, and of course, that's the most important, right?
Member community, tomorrow cops and rangers will be driving survival campers away from the San Lorenzo benchlands. The only immediate campground alternative is a barbed wire, yes, it's still barbed wire, fenced-off space at the edge of town that is about one-third the size of the current San Lorenzo campground. Homeless people are considered too dangerous to be able to walk to and from this campground, and it is reportedly, according to people who are out at the campground today, almost completely filled. The other shelter alternative is the Winter Shelter Program, slated to end in mid-April. It involves body searches, strict entering and leaving times, and other aspects that make it unsuitable for many outside, but even if it weren't, it's clearly insufficient for even a simple majority of the homeless people around. It's currently limited to 110 people. There are no plans for a summer shelter program other than the have you found a path to housing with cash and vouchers out at the homeless lack of services center. Given these sober facts, it's nonsense to believe government claims that San Lorenzo campers are being given a real alternative when they're driven out tomorrow into the neighborhoods, the downtown, and elsewhere. Much of the ballyhoo around these shelter proposals seems simply to be a way of dressing up mass eviction and possible city crackdown on poor people and repeating the same failed policies that have been used for the last few decades and intensified by many members of this city council. Here it is the community that needs to step in. And it needs to be, of course, homeless people themselves that organize. In Berkeley, first they came for the homeless, organized themselves into a group of people, and continued to resist the attempted evictions of police departments. And when they were evicted, they moved to another area. I encourage community members to support any homeless encampment people who are not given options into a community space, to support them in their need to find their own space and use it for survival purposes. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes oral communication this evening. We're going to bring it back to the council for the next item on the agenda, which is item number...
And then there was some discussion of Measure K, or actually essentially had the city attorney saying, oh, the current Measure K, they can't really eliminate Measure K. The city council can't do it itself. That's the lowest enforcement of marijuana being the lowest enforcement priority. So they have to put it to the voters, because originally it came from the voters, because the council was too drug war happy to actually pass a pro-marijuana type measure back in 2006. So now they have to actually send it back to the voters to eliminate it. And this is what they're doing. We're going to hear a little of that. And then it's going to be Sayonara from this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Thank goodness.
It's the ordinance language that we received with the friendly amendments from Councilmember Ryan.
The whole thing.
And so
it will be the arguments in favor of the signers.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
That passes unanimously. And so we're going to bring that back to item 313, and this is the resolution to include a measure on the June 2018 ballot on the repeal of Measure K. And I'll turn it over to the city attorney for a brief presentation.
Yes, really, very quickly, to give you a little bit of background, as I understand the history of Measure K, is it was originally drafted as a citizen-sponsored measure, but there were certain provisions of it that were determined to conflict with the city's charter, and so the city initiated legal action to seeking to remove those from the ballot measure, and subsequently entered into an agreement with the proponents of the measure to modify the language of Measure K.
And this was the neutering of Measure K after it was passed by the voters that I mentioned earlier, through a collusion between the city attorney, Theodora Carey, who was one of the proponents of the measure, and attorney Ben Rice. It was a sad situation. I think Carey may have even regretted what she did later, although I don't want to speak for her clearly, because I don't know, this was 12 years ago or 11 years ago.
The result being that the only really operative language of the measure directs the city police department to make enforcement of marijuana-related offenses its lowest enforcement priority, and creates an oversight committee to monitor the implementation of that policy. It turned out that the oversight committee's function didn't really make sense in light of what actually the measure included, and so the committee, after a couple of meetings, basically stopped meeting.
It's not really clear to me that that is necessarily true, although it would seem that, you know, the sort of a first look at it might say, well, you know, you got Proposition 64, you have sort of legalization of some sorts of recreational marijuana, though try smoking a joint on the street, even for medical purposes, good luck, even if you're in not in a no-smoking zone. They've created all kinds of hedges against that. You have to be 1,000 feet away from a children's facility, et cetera, where almost there are all these broad definitions that essentially implement the drug war, reefer madness stuff that we're still fighting to lift. So I think it really needs to be carefully looked at. Someone should really write the opposition to this measure, and you'll hear me talk about it. In fact, I think we'll skip ahead to that, because I'm getting close to deadline for getting this show out. And this is my blast against what the council has been doing around the drug war generally. And also there was an earlier speaker, Veronica Lopez Duran, who was notorious almost 20 years ago for supporting essentially the eviction of Hispanic people from the Dolphin and Lee projects, which became the Nueva Vista project. She became the shill for the city, and she was here speaking about an endowment fund for Elizabeth Butler, one of the two shot dead, I think the only two police officers shot dead on duty, but not the only people that the police have shot dead on duty, for sure, in Santa Cruz. And I give my final tirade against, essentially drug war policies in Santa Cruz.
Mr. Norris, go ahead.
So this measure was originally intended by the community because the city council refused to pass it under pressure from the police department. They refused to even put it on the ballot. It was an attempt to essentially monitor the police department's behavior, which continued to be abusive towards people who are engaging in marijuana use, smoking, and so forth. And the issue was whether there will be an oversight body. And the city took action to cripple the measure and then appointed people to it who would not enforce it. The chair and the vice chair resigned from this body a year after it was created, not as the city attorney states, because it was pointless. No, it was pointless, but because it was pointless trying to deal with a staff member who is now the assistant city manager, who essentially helped to cripple the measure. That is, the issue was to hold the police accountable and to have their records looked at. The police department resisted this, and essentially very little was ever done about this. So my point is to sort of clarify the record on this and also to suggest to you the same drug war mentality is still stalking Santa Cruz and is embodied in the city council's attempt to restrict marijuana consumption areas in retail businesses and refusal to allow, for example, a place where you can smoke marijuana or eat marijuana edibles within the city limits. We need to have real action on measures about marijuana, such as amnesty for any prosecutions and people still in jail for this kind of marijuana involvement that the city attorney has been involved with, and I acknowledge most of this is done by the district attorney, and also some indication of the costs and suffering caused, you know, by some of those great police department activists that are being celebrated otherwise, like officers Butler and Baker, who actually caused lots of suffering that this council never talks about and has never attempted to rectify. That's my point.
And that's it for this edition of Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. Thanks for listening in. Back again on Thursday. And there's also a no city council meeting this week, thank goodness. There is a Huff meeting at 11 a.m. at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific, right next to the bike church. Come and slurp coffee with us and chatter with us. The real issue is going to be defending people in encampments throughout the city. If they really, they're going to need to defend themselves, and we'll see if anybody's interested, as well as looking at what's going on in other cities. I'll be talking at you again on Thursday at 6, and if you want to reach me between times, I'm at 831-423-4833, the Huff line. Thanks for listening.